Thanks for joining us. You can always catch the latest sermon online, but we sure would love to see you join us in person to celebrate and support each other in our love for God, our neighbors, and this church. We are South Britain Congregational Church. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And now, enjoy another great Sunday sermon, and we hope to see you soon.
Our second scripture reading comes from the prophet Isaiah, chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim, each had six wings, and two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, "Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal, and he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, "Behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for." And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am. Send me." There was a bank in Binghamton, New York, and had some flowers sent to a competitor who had recently moved into a new building. And there was a mix-up at the flower shop, and the card sent with the arrangement read, "With our deepest sympathy." And the florist was greatly embarrassed until they found out an even greater embarrassment, because they had sent the other card that was intended for the bank to a funeral, which read, "Congratulations on your new location." We can safely say, no matter what we've done in our life, we've had days like that poor floral worker. Our scripture this morning is one we have probably heard, or at least have heard reference to. But I think the context is really important as we figure out what this passage has to say. In verse 1, it mentions the death of King Uzziah. We need to know a little more about this kind of subtle reference, because you read it and you kind of move on quickly to this beautiful vision of the throne in heaven. King Uzziah was the 10th king of Judah, and he was actually a really godly king. He was influenced by the prophet Zechariah, and unlike many of the other kings, he never totally departed from worship of the triune true God. He was like the one of the only good kings of Judah and Israel, and if you look carefully, that bar is, you know, saying that he's one of the good kings is like saying, like, you know, he's a pretty good baseball player for never, you know, hitting the ball very well. So he was very, like, the bar for kings is very low. So Uzziah was actually a pretty good king. And under his influence, the southern kingdom attained power, wealth, success, and almost back to the days of King Solomon. But as all good things come to an end, and made heady by his success as a king and his blessing from the Lord, things were going really, really well. And towards the end of his life, this is in 2 Chronicles 26, he decided to go into the temple and make an incense offering, which is a big, big mistake. And he was stricken with leprosy for doing that. And he died in this leprous condition. So didn't turn out so well for King Uzziah. And so it showed disobedience to God is pretty serious, because only the priests could do the offering things. He kind of got a little bit outside of his lane in terms of what kings were supposed to be able to do. But it seems that Isaiah is really disturbed by the death of this great king. After all, he reigned for 52 years. Queen Elizabeth II, longest reigning monarch. Anybody know how long? More. Almost 70 years. Wow, right? 69, it will be 70, I think, this year. These are long times to have a monarch. And when you have that, you have this kind of consistency where, especially if it's a good king and the way King Uzziah was good, things were pretty steady. But this death signaled a time of, you know, the end of this prosperity and consistency. And for Isaiah and the entire nation, it ushered in a time of uncertainty, change, and doubt. Yet for Isaiah, this was to be a time that he found to be a time of rediscovery. Apparently, Isaiah had his attention. He was so focused on Uzziah being this great king, and all of his hope was settled into this earthly king, that he had forgotten that it's about God. Isaiah, somewhere in his heart, had thought, as long as old Uzziah is on the throne, everything's going to be okay. And like the great poet Walt Whitman, when he wrote, when Abraham Lincoln died, "Oh, captain, my captain," it was that kind of feeling. So with the death of the king, it must have been sort of a downtime for Isaiah. You know, but this downtime quickly turned into an uptime as he had this vision of God. And that's what held his attention, and Isaiah had moved into a fresh encounter with God. He saw God in a new way. And so what happened to Isaiah in this event spotlights for us what we need sometimes when we find ourselves in a downtime, or we've had our hope in something and then something quickly changes. Because we have downtimes in our life, and they can grow us, they can ruin us. It depends on what our attention is. So let's look at these familiar verses and what we need in the downtimes of life. Learning what to do when life turns down will help us to get back up the way Isaiah did. We need to see, I think first, we need to see what Isaiah saw. Here we have three P's. He saw God's position, he saw God's personality, he saw God's presence. First, Isaiah saw God's position. Isaiah saw God and his sovereignty. An earthly king may have died, but God still reigned. So from the earthly perspective, the sky was falling. Hope was gone. Anything could happen. And we probably all had times like that in my life. I was thinking about that, and one time I was so certain something was going to happen was, as a Patriots fan, the undefeated season. If anybody knows anything about that, I remember it was a beautiful sunny day. I was golfing, right? I went out because even though it was February, I was golfing. I was like, you know what? The Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. It's written in the stars. It's destiny. I was nothing so sure in my entire life. And it didn't happen. Needless to say, I don't want to get into it. But that was something I was so sure about, and my hope was in that. But for Isaiah, we can look around and we can be disappointed, disillusioned, because what looked and felt consistent is no longer there. And we've seen that in the last year, right? Where things we were so sure, were so consistent, all of a sudden started to move, started to change. But the vision of Isaiah reminds us to see what he saw. Isaiah saw the Lord in all of his glory and had a profound impact on his life. C.H. Spurgeon says, "There's no attribute more comforting to his children than that of God's sovereignty. Under the most adverse circumstances and the most severe trials, they believe that sovereignty has ordained their afflictions, that sovereignty overrules them, and that sovereignty will sanctify them. There's nothing for which the children ought to be more earnestly contend than the doctrine of God over all of creation." So when in downtimes, we can remember that God is up high above, seeing all, seeing the future and the past at once, ruling from his throne, and that helps us the way it helped Isaiah to have this vision. That things that happen and are in flux, but God is a constant lighthouse. Or to steal a line from Pete's Dragon, "God is our candle on the water." Everybody know that song? "I'll be your candle on the water." That one. God's our candle on the water. It's ever steady. See, I can sing now because we don't have to wear masks. Watch out. Watch out, Chuck. So if you'd observe them carefully, you know, in another way of looking at this, in the frigid waters around Greenland, there are icebergs, and some are little and some are gigantic. And if you observe them, you see some of the small ones are moving in one direction and the big ones are moving in a different direction, counter to the flow of the other. And the explanation is simple, that the surface winds are pushing the little ones, and the big ones are not being pushed by the surface winds. They're being pulled by the deep ocean currents. And it's the same thing when we face trials and tragedies. See our lives as the two forces. There's surface winds and there's ocean currents. And the wind represents the ever-changing, unpredictable, distressing, but operating simultaneously is God in this undercurrent, moving the bigger things. That God's the undercurrent to these things. It's the sure movement of God's wise sovereignty, the deep flow of his unchanging love. So in hard times, when our hope is shaken and it seems like a sea change, remembering and seeing God's position above this flux and flow helps us. But Isaiah also saw something else. He saw the second one, God's personality. The angelic beings in the temple, you know, proclaim three times. They say, "Holy, holy, holy." You know, and it wasn't that they couldn't come up with something else to say. They were repeating. Repeating in Hebrew, especially in other things, is for emphasis. Like, go clean your room. Your room, all right? We emphasize when we repeat. So to say holy, holy, holy was the way of saying three is the highest amount of holy. There's nothing holier than you, God. Holy, holy, holy. And it's shown, they noticed, and they did this in another way. They covered their wings. They covered their eyes. They weren't, even these amazing angels weren't even worthy to be in God's presence. And they proclaimed how amazing God was. That God is so holy, so utterly spectacular that they had to cover their eyes. If anybody likes Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? What happens at the end? They have to cover their eyes so they don't melt. I don't want to ruin it for you, but that's why they have to cover their eyes because they can't see the ark. They can't see the glory coming out of the ark. If you haven't seen it, you've had about 40 years now. So it's that idea that God is so amazingly other that they have to cover their eyes just to reemphasize this holy, holy, holy nature of God. And Isaiah in this moment finally understood or was reminded that Uzziah may have been a great king and had his great moments and was an amazing person, but God, the king, is greater and more awesome, that the Lord was God and he was holy and above all things and deserved all the glory of Isaiah's life, and that he had kind of put it into the wrong place. And that reminds us that God is a good, holy parent, and you know, other things may bring us hope, but they're just shadows of this real hope that is in God. And Isaiah learned that the thing was not about Uzziah or Isaiah, but it was all about God, that God is the one who is the person in the center, of central to all of our worship and focus, because it belongs to God alone. And we've seen this, and you see that in Job, and you see it over and over again, that when bad things are happening in the Hebrew scriptures, you know, even in Job, it says, you know, God, at the end of it, you know, Job's like, why is all this bad stuff happening to me? And God's like, I'm big. I am big. And that has to be enough for Job. That has to be enough to help Job to understand. So in the downtimes of life, we need to remember who is working all things out in their holiness, in the glory, and remember that God is awesome. So we look at God's personality in the downtimes, but we can also see in verse 4 God's presence. We're told that the house was filled with smoke, that there was a symbol of the presence of God, and that the whole thing is filled with just God's, the whole thing is filled with God's robe. God was a central figure in the temple. And Isaiah was reminded rather forcefully that Uzziah might be gone, but the Lord was still there. He wasn't going anywhere. God was where God has always been and would always be. And he had not been forsaken even in the downtime, but the Lord was still with him in his great glory. In the downtimes, we can turn quickly and say, God, where are you? And that's okay in our hurt, but God is still there. We need to remember that truth as well. Even in hard times, we're not alone. But even during the downtimes of life, we still have the presence of God with us at all times. God is the one on the throne, robed and ready to love and care for us. And Jesus reiterates this idea in Matthew 28:20. He says, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded, and I'm with you even to the end of the age. So it's that same kind of idea that no matter what's going on, God is with us. Isaiah saw these three P's that helped him in his hard time. But finally, in the downtimes, the last thing that we can learn from Isaiah is what he said. Not just what he saw, but what he said. He said, I'm available. As soon as Isaiah gets, you know, he gets a clean heart, they bring the tong, you know, the coal, and they burn away all the sin, and he's ready to go. And Isaiah says, here I am. He's saying, my downtime is over. I'm ready to serve. He was signifying that he was over the death of Uzziah, and his life was at the altar of sacrifice to the glory of God. And that's what we need to do sometimes when we're in our down times. We need to get to the altar and come there and say, I'm ready. You know, one of the great quotes says, most people wish to serve God, but only as an advisory capacity. So we need to submit, surrender, and sacrifice. And there's a great example of this. 11th century, King Henry III of Bavaria, he kind of grew tired of court life, and he made an application to become to Prior Richard at a local monastery. He was like, I'm going to leave being a king, and I'm just going to go to a monastery, and asking to be accepted as a contemplative and spend the rest of his life in the monastery. And Your Majesty, said poor Richard, do you understand that the pledge here is one of obedience? That will be hard because you've been a king. And the king said, I understand the rest of my life I will be obedient to you as Christ leads you. And so then Prior Richard said, then I will tell you what to do. Go back to your throne and serve faithfully in the place where God has put you. When King Henry died, a statement was written, said the king learned to rule by being obedient. When we think about our roles and responsibilities, it helps to remember God has planted us and said, go do this, and we're called to say, here I am. Christ expects us to be faithful where God puts us, and we have to say, I'm available, I'm free, and more than that, I'm agreeable. Isaiah not only told the God of his availability, but he also mentions that he's agreeable. He says, I'm here to do what you want me to do, and that helps to kind of pull us out of these down times, to pull us into, better things. We all know down times, but in those times we were felt left down by figures or people in our life, or maybe we put our hope into something that we figure is going to be the most consistent, most steady thing that will never change. This is the, this is the rock that I am going to build my things upon. And when that happens, when things change, when things start to move, and that's not as consistent as it was, we can have some comfort and look to this passage of Isaiah and say, oh, that was just a shadow. That's just an image of what the real consistent thing is. Because the real consistent thing, no matter what's going on, is that God is where God's supposed to be, and God's loving us infinitely. Amen.